The following program contains mature subject matter not suitable for young viewers and graphic images that may be disturbing. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hello, everyone. It is Friday. So you know what that means. It's another episode of the Wee Wild Woman and the Fat Man Farmer podcast. I am the Fat Man Farmer. We have no Wee Wild Woman today because yesterday was her birthday. She's a big old 12 now. Almost an Amazon woman. Wearing size 11 women's shoes, size 5 in women's pants. Because we had to go clothes shopping yesterday because nothing she has fits anymore. At the ripe old age of 12, she's standing 5'6" at 125 pounds. She's a big girl. Senior farm boss keeps saying that she just walked out the womb when she was born. 24 inches and 9 pounds, 3 ounces, I believe. She was a big baby. Anyway, that has nothing to do with it. Yesterday was her birthday, and her best friend came over to hang out today with her, so she's hanging out at home. And she's on baby goat watch. So, we have a couple of goats who are due any day, and she likes to hang out to make sure that there's no issues, and she can go out and assist if anything is needed. The goats seem to always want to have babies when nobody's looking or nobody's around or in the middle of the night. They hang on to them. As long as you're standing there watching them, they're not going to have the babies. However, because we're having babies, that means some new goats will be available because we need to downsize some goats. Lots of these are whoopsie goats from Gaylord Falker, who is our new buck, decided to get out and escape and get some of the little girls who we were not intending to get pregnant. And he missed all of the big girls who we wanted to get pregnant. So we have a bunch of little mini goats. So they're crosses of Nigerian dwarf, myotonic, mini Nubian crosses. So they're mutts. Mutts are usually pretty resilient. The first one that's come out has got floppy ears. It's a female. It's a doe. So we'll see where it goes from there. Today's podcast was a special request from Bill, who is an admin in one of the groups I admin on Facebook. For those of you who don't know, I admin a lot of damn groups. One of them is Indianapolis Permaculture. And I don't know, I think that we have like 800 members in there where we talk about permaculture related things. And it's not just for Indianapolis, but that's what it was when we first started. And I lived in Indianapolis because there was an Indiana permaculture. They would not let me in an admin or be part of the moderation staff. So I created my own just for Indianapolis, and it's grown. And since then, Indiana permaculture really doesn't do much. So most all of them come to Indianapolis permaculture. Says it's a central hub for a lot of things, and we have people from Fort Wayne and all over in the group. Let's see, Bill's group that he's asking about, or not asking about, but he wants information from, is Homesteaders of Indiana bartering page. I think we're up to 4,600 members. It's a statewide group. Barter only, no sales. If you want to join on Facebook, but you need to answer the questions and agree to the rules or you don't get in. Follow the rules or we boot you out. You get a lot of warnings though. People make mistakes, we understand that, but constantly ignoring the rules will get you suspended. If you still can't follow the rules, you get booted. But we trade animals, we trade equipment. There are as someone put it, freedom senders and freedom seeds in there. And because we are very tight on who we get in and we monitor a lot of the bots that come in, we've been operating for a year on Facebook doing animal trades, firearm trades, and haven't gotten booted or we've only gotten one warning in the year. And we think we know that why that was. So anyway, that's another group. I also own a local group of Putnam County Homesteaders, which is my county where I live. I own Putnam County Barter Town, which is a barter page for Putnam County. I own Indiana Urban and Rural Farm Alliance, which we don't get much action on there. We used to do it a lot, but it's a way to connect urban farms, rural farms, talk about the different similarities and differences we have regulations that are coming up that people may need to know about, things like that. And then I am the admin on TSP Indiana, or the Survival Podcast Indiana, which is a state group for people who listen and follow the Survival Podcast, which is another podcast, which is where I learned a lot about and got information for a lot of the stuff that we do. So Jack Spierko over there runs that, and he's been going on for, I want to say, 13 years, over 3,000 episodes. They're about an hour to hour and a half long, sometimes shorter, sometimes longer. A lot of great info there. So those are my, I probably have some more that I'm forgetting about, but those are the main ones that I moderate and regulate. So there was a barter that came up on our bartering page, and it was for a herding dog, a 6-month-old, and the woman had listed a couple of things that she wanted, and Bill knew that I was looking for one kind of casually. Since we have around 200 sheep and 150 ewes that are pregnant, and we're going to have a lot more sheep, we are now to the point that two of us, which would either be me and Junior Farm Boss, or maybe me and Senior, or Senior and Junior, cannot round up the flock. They'll split, they go into different areas, so we really need, you know, three of us, and we're not always three of us around, so a herding dog would definitely be a great resource. Anyway, so she had this up there, and I'm like, I'm definitely interested, but I'm no longer allowed to authorize any new animals or bring any new animals to the property after the goat alpaca incident. And Bill found that funny, and so did some of the other mods, so our admins, and they wanted to know more. And I gave them kind of a 10,000-foot view of the story, and they can understand why I'm no longer allowed to have animals. I mean, I have a lot of rules on the farm, and that's kind of the main one right now. The other ones, I can't go to any more auctions until I sell some of the stuff that I have. Mainly because we just don't have any room. I mean, there's walking paths in some of our rooms because I have so much stuff that I haven't sold off yet. Anyway, so back to the goat alpaca incident. Oh, this was probably our second or third year into the farm, and we had quite the collection of animals at that time. We had llamas, we had a Pygorish goat, who is basically like it's a cashmere-type goat, very fine wool. It's, when you think of a cashmere sweater, that's where it comes from. And we had the wool sheep. Then we had an Angora rabbit. So we had quite a few of the wool producing or fiber producing animals. We were playing around with raising silkworms. So, you know, we had a lot of different things we were playing around with. And a friend of mine from Indy said, hey, I have this friend who has an animal sanctuary and or an animal rescue. And she has having some difficulties, and she needs to rehome some of her animals. And she has this goat that looks like some of your goats, and, you know, would you be interested? Like, sure, send me a picture. So when we saw this picture of this goat, he was a purebred Oberhasli buck. But this guy was massive. He looked like an elk and a goat cross. We're talking 300 plus pounds easy. His horns spanned 4 feet. Oh yeah, forgot. Bill, I'm putting this on a YouTube with pictures and everything just for you so that you could see, because I had too many issues trying to record video while I'm driving. So now you can see things while I'm doing it. Anyway, so this guy was huge. Looking at him, I mean, he was just all muscle. They had found him roaming around downtown Indy. It took like months to get him, and he went to this woman's rescue. Well, she had him in these 8-foot-tall cattle panels, and it was quite the, I don't want to say cage, but, you know, pen that he was in. Massive. And he's scared of everything. So when we showed up, he ran and hid. He wasn't personable. He did not like people, but he was massive. And at that time, we had two Oberhasli does. So that would have been perfect if we wanted to continue with an Oberhasli breed line. And we had, you know, some other dairies. We had Toggenburg and Alpine at the time. So, you know what? Why not make some crosses and see what we get? So, great. So, I started talking to the woman. She's like, hey, you know, I looked on your site, check you guys out, and it looks like you guys do fiber, too. Would you be interested in some alpacas? I've had some alpacas I need to rehome. So, we talked it over with Senior Fawn Boss, and she's like, sure, why not? We've never had alpacas. We have llamas. They seem like they're pretty close. Seems like is the key word, because they're not close at all. They're in the same family, but man, those are two different animals. We'll get there later. I digress. So we're like, okay. She's like, I have one intact male. He's a Kriya, so a baby of one of the girls. We think maybe some of the other ones are pregnant. We don't know, because we took them in as a rescue. We don't know their history. They've had some issues. They've been checked out by a vet, and yada, yada, yada. So the whole vet coming to check them out and things gave us a little more confidence that it's not somebody else's problem. So we agree to that. And she's like, well, if you're going to get the Oberhasli buck, she didn't know what he was. She just knew she was going to take him in. She didn't know much about any of these animals, nor did she really handle them very much, we found out. So she's like, would you be interested in any other goats? We're like, maybe. We saw some of the pictures and like, okay, some of these goats, while they're not purebred, they could probably be with some of our smaller goats we had. So what ended up being the one Oberhasli buck I was interested in ended up being 8 or 9 alpacas and at least 10, it might have been more, goats. Now, because some of these had balls when we got there, their nuts were hanging down. I'm like, oh, you didn't tell us that these were intact males. These were bucks. She's like, oh, no. The vet came and crushed them. Well, that was a new one for us, so we had to look it up. And basically, they take these clamps and crush the vas deferens, the way that the semen would go out, and they shouldn't be able to produce any more babies. But they leave the nuts on there. Because she was concerned about, you know, they're too old to be banded, you'd have to do surgery, and I'm assuming that she didn't want to pay for that part of it. Okay, says the vet has them fixed and they won't produce babies. Okay, so we get the, you know, big caravan, had 3 different vehicles transporting all these animals to our place, get them in there, get everybody set up, have to build new pens before they get their new fences for everybody. Well, then the big guy, nothing will contain him. He can scale 6-foot fence like nobody's business. And so we ended up having to put him in the barn and basically enclose him, which he didn't like. He started tearing the barn up, putting holes in the metal, bending gates like tube steel gates, bending them. And so he got out once, but he didn't go very far. He just kind of stayed at the edge of the property. And so we would go and bring him feed and bring him water. And there was buildings out there he could get access to. He just didn't want to be contained and be there with us around him. Okay, you know what? He'll hang around. He'll be fine. He's out there. He's not damaging anything. He's scared of people. He's scared of the other goats. He's not really being a problem other than he just won't stay where he's supposed to. Okay, well, that's fine. Maybe he'll warm up to us as we feed him. Then there was Gandalf. Oh, the big guy, we named him Leonidas from 300 because he was like the big, massive, he was going to be our breeder and yada, yada, yada. The head of the goat pack. Then there was Gandalf. Gandalf was he was a big goat. He looked like some sort of boar cross, but he was very, very meaty, but he had this big, white, flowing beard. And he was like built like a triangle. He's so big on the front end, shoulders and chest. His back end was a little bit smaller and lower. So he almost looks like one of the mountain goats or like the goats you see from Thor and things like this where they're really big up front but small in the butt. He was an asshole. He was the biggest asshole we ever had. So no matter where we put him, he destroyed every bit of the fencing. Destroyed chain link gates, destroyed metal panels, destroyed wooden walls. I mean, he was destructive, and all he wanted to do was mate the girl goats. So he had a lot of testosterone going on, and that was his sole function. And so no matter what we did, we couldn't keep him contained. So we tried to put him further away from the girls. Wouldn't work. Well, then he started, you know, we at that time had some little baby goats that she bottle raised that lived in a room in a dog crate. She'd take them out and they'd go play in the playground and all this. She was out in the yard one day, and Gandalf somehow got from the back pastures up into the front of the yard and went after her little goats. And let me tell you, those goats ran under the porch, but he was so big he couldn't get under there. That child jumped off the porch, went to town on this goat, and beat the snot out of him with a T-ball bat. Gandalf had to be put down after that because we believe he had a broken leg and broken ribs, and he was not doing so well. Because of his aggressive tendencies, because our farm rule is get along or get gone, he got gone. We would have rather rehomed him or take him in for processing after rut, but we couldn't contain him in any way, shape, or form, no matter what we did. We even tried locking him in a stock trailer. That didn't work. So that was goat number one that took off. Then we had Spike. He was somewhere in between Leonidas and Gandalf. He could scale 4-foot cattle panels, and again, he kept getting out, going after the girls, and he was big. If he got on pretty much any of our girls, he was going to hurt them. And our girls are pretty tame. They come eat. They walk with us in the woods, unattended, no leashes or anything. So they're very people-oriented. He was not. Big horns, and he was a jerk. It was rut season, and again, we were going off of their fix. We asked her, are they fixed? Yeah, they're fixed. The vets, I can get you paperwork. Well, the paperwork never came. And this was about time when a whole bunch of the Black Lives Matter was going on, and apparently I'm a racist and whatnot, and we basically stopped communicating after that point. And that's a whole nother story, the Black Lives Matter and why I was a racist. And so one day we're out, and Spike decides to go after Wee when she got between him and some of the bigger girls. She was trying to prevent him from getting into the actual barn where they were kept separate, and was headbutting her. And after he knocked her down once, that was it. Went in, got the AR, put him down right there, no questions asked. He was done. And that was goat number two. Wow. Then we had all these little hobalong goats. I don't know what you want to call them. They were mutts. They weren't myotonic because they never fainted, but I want to say they're bigger than Nigerian dwarfs, but they were no kind of breed of goat that I've ever seen. So they were mutts. There was a bunch of them, males and females. Well, the females start dropping babies, which they weren't supposed to be pregnant. Then these other goats managed to get almost every one of our breeding goats. Now we no longer have dairy lines. We have mutts that these guys got. And we went from 10 or so goats to 30 real quick. And that's way too many goats for us. We did not have the fencing, the equipment, the barn, anything. And especially with all these goats who were not fixed, I had enough. I was done with them. So I said, put out on Facebook back when you could do this, bunch of goats, make me an offer, come get them. And lots of people were like, well, will you take this much? I don't know why people want to do that. If you put a price out there, that's really what you want. It's not what you want less. If you wanted less, you'd put less. So I digress. So I think we had like $1,200 for like 15 or 20 goats. And we had a couple of offers. Finally, this guy shows up. Had I known who he was, I would not have sold it to him, because he's the one who we watched shear goats or sheep one time and just nicked and cut them. And come to find out, he's basically an animal flipper. So he goes and buys them from people who have too many and offers them way too little, or people who need to get out because they're moving. buys them all up, throws them in a pen, and then sells them individually or takes them to the sale barn and gets more money out of them. So, did I really want to sell them to them? No. But in the same aspect, we had way too many goats. So, you know, in this process of all these goats and all these issues, we had some papered Miatonic goats. So these are the fainting goats. And we and I broke the fainting goats because we scared them too much, so they really didn't scare anymore. But we were going to, you know, put them in there. He offered us, you know, quite a bit of money for these papered goats. And before that, the little goblin goats that came from this rescue ended up killing two of the babies. Because the babies got scared, fainted, and then they kept ramming them after they were down. So they basically pummeled two of these papered goats to death. So again, they all had to go. So, you know, we're talking, we've lost 6-7 goats now. Plus, you know, that's including the ones that we had to put down because of this ordeal. And, you know, we're done with goats. Nowhere will we ever get goats from somebody else at this time. Because this was just a really shitty experience. So then we had to deal with all of our does, and we had to get set back another year from our breeding program that we were trying to do, because they were all bred by these mutts. So, you know, got rid of all of these goats, and now we have a much more manageable herd of, you know, I think we're down to like 10, and they're pretty much all pets. They all eat out of your hand, they all follow you. They'll get on the milking stand so we can milk them. So we're at a much better level. Now we have Gaylord Falker, who got out and got a bunch of the goats. If you don't know, Gaylord Falker is from the movie Meet the Falkers. And, you know, we call him Greg in just in passing, but his name is Gaylord Falker. And we all, you know, also known as Greg. So now we got a bunch of little goats that we will probably be looking to get rid of. So then that brings me to the alpacas. So we didn't know that Kriyas, which are baby alpacas, stay with their mother for a year. And they're very hard to separate. They get depressed and everything. Well, we had one boy, no castrated males. I don't know what a castrated alpaca is. Maybe a weather. Never looked it up. So he had to be off by himself because he became wanting to start breeding everybody, and we weren't ready to have more alpacas. 8 was enough at that time. So he got all depressed, had to be by himself, put him where he could still see mom and the others, and all he did was cry, and then he wouldn't eat. And so we had lots of issues with him of trying to baby him and, you know, keep him alive, which he did for a year and a half. He ended up dying because had a storm, and we think a widowmaker fell out of the tree and hit him. After this storm, there were large branches down in his pasture, and he just wasn't walking very well. And within a couple of days of seeing this, we tried to figure out what was wrong, feel on him. He didn't seem to have any broken bones. He just up and died. So it didn't look like he had pneumonia. We were not 100% sure what happened during this. He had enclosures to go to, so we were at a loss on that. Now the other alpacas. We had llamas, and we thought they were pretty close together. They kind of are. The llamas like getting pet, coming up for treats. You know, you can walk up to them, and once they got to know you, they were cool. Not the alpacas. If you ever watch the movie, The Emperor's New Groove, when he becomes it says it's a llama, but really it's an alpaca. You know, no touchy, and he doesn't want anybody to touch him. That's how the alpacas are. They don't want to be pet. They don't want to be loved on, even though they're fluffy and they look like it. They want nothing to do with people. And if you look at them funny, or, you know, they don't like you, they spit at you. And they spit at you in your face. And when I'm talking, it's not like, you know, just like a wet spit and whatnot. I'm talking partially digested vegetable matter that has the consistency of like tar. It gets in everything, it stinks, and if you get it in your hair, it takes a while to get it out. Let's just say I have long hair and I have a beard and got spit on more than a few times. And you have to shear them because they'll get too hot. And they get too hot, they want water. So then they kept getting in all of our water troughs. Then they get stuck. They can't get out. So we gave them pools. They would get in the pools, and then they would put their dirty, nasty feet in it, then drink from it, then they would get worms. They would stick their heads in places that they should have no business sticking their head, can't figure out how to get out, flip out, and then break their neck. We had two do that. Literally stick their head in somewhere, flip out because they got stuck, and break their neck. In this, one was in a fence row, one was under a trailer. You know, go figure. Death wishes. So, you know, we tried to shear these the first year. We had no experience shearing them. So luckily, somebody in our area is a shearer and, you know, has alpacas and breeds alpacas. She came and showed Senior Farm Boss how to do it. So she took off work, met with this lady, showed us how to do it standing up, tied up. It was great. We got them. Yes, they spit a lot. So my job was to hold their face away so that they wouldn't spit in her while they were getting shorn. Now, this isn't indicative of all alpacas. I'm going to guess it's because this, where they came from, they were not handled. They were not shorn. They didn't have personal attention. So they weren't really good for farm pets or shearing. Their fiber was okay, rug quality, I'll give you, at best. Their toenails are like giant talons. We had to cut those. They didn't like that. So one of my ex-wife's family members raised alpacas too, and they were selling all their stuff and moving to Florida. And she hit me up as offering a shearing table after hearing some of our experiences trying to shear them at, you know, a pretty significant discount. I'm like, sure. And let me tell you, a shearing table is awesome if you've got alpacas or llamas. Llamas are much easier, at least the ones that we had. So basically, this table flips up on its side so it's vertical. You kind of walk the alpaca over to it. You strap in their legs. And then you flip the table over so they're on their side. And you shear them on that side. And then you flip the table the other way. And you shear their other side. Or you roll them on the table. It's a whole visual thing. Anyway. Oh, that's for sale if anybody wants it. So I got to put that on our barter table. You know, a shearing table was awesome for alpacas. Doesn't work for sheep or anybody else. It's like only alpacas and llamas. It's adjustable height for different people or the height of the animals. Made shearing so much easier so that once we got them on the table, we could put a muzzle on them and then shear them without having them move, without having them spit. It's not a two-person job. One person can do it. It was pretty great. So, you know, we've lost two alpacas from killing themselves. They've contaminated every water source. No matter what we did, we couldn't keep them out of water. Either we had to raise, because they're so tall, if we raised the water buckets or the troughs, the sheep couldn't get water, but you know that. But then the alpacas couldn't stand in it. If we put grates across the top, the sheep would jump up on there and get their legs stuck between the grates, and then they couldn't do it, or they couldn't get their faces down in between the grates. I mean, we had all kinds of issues with water and the alpacas. So they would walk around all the fields, put their dirty, nasty feet in there. The mud water would get muddy and full of possible parasites. So then we'd have to worm unnecessary because of all of them. Anyway, it was a big, ugly mess. So then, you know, we start noticing a couple of them in winter, they're not moving their back legs. It started off with one, and we had lots of ice. We thought maybe they were kind of dragging one leg. I'm like, okay, well, maybe, you know, it slipped. It's hurt itself, so we got it. We kind of moved all the motion. Everything seemed fine. We couldn't tell any kind of physical injury, but it kept kind of dragging the one leg. So, okay, so we start doing some research, and we're not seeing anything. Maybe it's a pulled muscle. Maybe it got, you know, between the other ones, somebody got hit, or maybe a ram hit it. Well, then all of a sudden, three of them went down. and their back ends wouldn't move. They could move the front, but they couldn't move the back. So this is something more than just slipping on ice. If three of them have it, it's not a unique thing. So we start researching and researching it, and there's something called meningeal worm. And it's a three-stage parasite that deers carry it, are not impacted by it, but where deers defecate or where they poop, it comes out, where eggs come out, and then slugs eat it, and the slugs incubate these eggs to a larval state, and then the alpacas are really susceptible. Goats and sheep can get it too, but camelids, which is what alpacas, camels, alpacas, and vincuas are very susceptible. Okay, we have meningeal worm. These animals are about 200 pounds, hard to move from in the frozen tundra of the field, and they decided to drop on the backside of the pastures. So we managed these tarps, slid them across the ground, got them into the barn, tried to medicate them. Well, what the meningeal worms do is start eating the lining of the nervous system. And so that's why they went down. They're actually eating the lining from the nervous, and they can't move. They're paralyzed. If you can catch this early enough, you can stop it, and they may be able to recover some. But once their back ends start going out completely, they're mostly done. We learned this the hard way. So we treated them with everything, wormed them daily, brought warm water to them, and you know they lasted about two more weeks before we think the damage was too much and they just couldn't do any more. We think we've killed the worms in them, but the damage was already there and it started breaking down in their system. So we lost three of the alpacas that way. So now we're down out five alpacas out of the, I want to say eight. Six alpacas, sorry. So we're down to two. And we had the last, we don't know any history on these, so we don't know how old they are, what their history is, what their medical history was before. And one of the last two, we don't know what happened. Everybody was fine. Everybody was eating. No issues. No, you know, kind of anything that we could see. And we're out there every day, either feeding, putting hands on, checking fence, you know, all these kind of things. Out of the blue, one spring, just dead. And you know, that left Glinda. Glinda is going to live forever because no matter what she's gone through, she still survives, and now she thinks she's a sheep. You know, and my wife had gotten really attached to some of these alpacas, and especially when you're out there for hours trying to nurse them back to health, medical, and you're really hoping these animals will pull through, you kind of get attached. You know, that's kind of the farm life. So she was very sad about some of these things. And now Glinda, no spitting. She'll come up and eat out of your hand. She's not been shorn in 3 years, but it doesn't seem to faze her any. She eats with the sheep. She sleeps with the sheep. She has no kind of death wish like the other ones did. She will stand in some of the troughs, but we've now given her her own pool each summer. And she seems to, that's her pool. She goes in it, she lays in it to cool off. Or we will go out there with a sprinkler head and shower her, and she really likes that. So, you know, going through all this with the alpacas and learning about meningeal worm and the heartache of losing them. So, senior farm boss after that says, no more animals from you. You may not get any animals at auction. You may not take any fosters. You may not do anything to bring animals unless I say so or junior farm boss gives the go-ahead. And she knows what to look for. So apparently I don't, and the 12-year-old does. So since that time, I may present animal opportunities, and usually they're met with no or maybe. We did get Thorstason on my recommendation, so he's been a pretty good dog. However, that does not go the other way. I am not consulted on any animals that come to the farm because Gaylord Fucker showed up one day without my knowledge. I'm like, oh, what is this? Why is he here? And apparently, Wee's best friend's mother and senior farm boss conspired to do this behind my back, and he just showed up one day. And when I asked her about it, she goes, no take backs. He's yours. See ya. So that's kind of the story on the goat and alpaca thing. With the meningeal worm, you don't know they have it until they start showing symptoms. So they get these in the spring when the new grass is coming up and it's low. They're eating low to the ground, and the slugs are on the grass also close to the ground, and that's when they pick up the slugs and get in their system. We didn't know about all of this at the time. We didn't even know anything about meningeal worm. Now we do. So Glinda will get a round of wormer usually at the end of winter, right before spring, or right, you know, as we're starting to thaw and get things in spring, just as a preventative. We hate to do that, but even though she's kind of diehard, nothing's going to happen to her, want to keep her around, and, you know, if we can do something as small as that is, we'll do it. There are only certain wormers, and I wish I knew off the top of my head, this is not my specialty on the farm. Medications and medical treatments is something for senior farm boss. So I don't remember which specific kind, but there is only one or two wormers that will treat meningeal worm. And like I said, they'll get them in the spring, but we didn't notice, spring and summer, we didn't notice anything until winter. So they sat in their system for that long. We don't worm all of our other animals regularly. We have certain breeds that are more susceptible to parasite loads, and that's our Finns. So anybody who is a Finn full blood or Finn at least 50% does get a wormer at least once a year, usually when we shear. All of the pure Shetlands or the Shetland crosses with Rambouillet or Lincoln Longwool or Columbia or Babyface, they pretty much don't get wormer unless we see signs that they're needing it, which is their Fimacha score, or you can look in their eyelids and see if they're pink or white. White means they have a very high parasite load. Pink means they're very, you know, there's low or none. Their body's handling it. Most livestock have some sort of parasite load. And, you know, it's their ability to tolerate it. The Shetlands are like little tanks. I don't think we've ever done anything to the Shetlands. I mean, those things are hardy. They will keep going and keep ticking and birth out in the winter and the snow. Nothing seems to slow those guys down. They are smaller, and their wool is not, you know, the best. It's decent. It's not the best. But, you know, we don't have to do anything with the Shetlands. And they eat stuff that other animals don't eat or won't eat. So, you know, the reason we don't worm everybody all the time is because you can build a resistance. And if you are resistant to most of the wormers, you have no other recourse. There's nothing you can do, and your animals just die, because no matter what wormers you give them, it's not going to treat them because you've now got a resistant one. Barber pole worm is one of the ones that have become pretty resistant as of lately. Not in our farm, but in other farms. I heard some friends who were Washington State somewhere up there, and their barber pole worms, they couldn't do anything. Like, if you got barber pole on your farm, you had to basically either kill all your stock, see if anybody was resistant, and see if they can, you know, survive it, or, you know, just stop doing sheep or goats for a while until that parasite load died down. So, you know, that's a situation we don't want to encounter, where our primary animals are sheep and goats. I mean, if you don't account for chickens, but that's, you know, chickens are a dime a dozen. Anyway, so that's kind of the parasite load and things like that. And it's the whole story of why I am not allowed to have or authorize any new animals. So there's your story, Bill, from the beginning to the end. I'll put some, hopefully you'll be able to see pictures on YouTube. I don't know what else I could talk about those of some of the other animals that I've brought in that have had issues, but that's, for the most part, that's the one that, like, sealed me. Oh, yeah, the geese. Heh. She hates the geese. We is another one who... The geese are more afraid of we than they are of my wife or me. Well, me, they stay away too, but they'll still try and sneak up me behind my back. We has a pretty much established a hierarchy. The geese don't mess with her anymore. And this is because she used to be scared for them and run. I said, they chase you because you run. Stand up to them. They're being bullies. You stand up to them because you don't like bullies either. So once she did that, and she stopped being scared of them, she started carrying a 6-foot pole with her everywhere she went where the geese were. If they got close, they didn't have to bite her, she'd just swat at them and knock them over. So then the geese started learning to stay a good, 4 to 5 feet away from her. And as she got bigger, she got stronger, her arms got longer, and the geese now started getting braver and coming up to her if they saw that she didn't have her pole. Well, that was the first straw for the geese. She then started grabbing them by the neck and doing like a hammer toss from the Olympics, where she would turn around in a circle and get some speed and launch the one goose that attacked her into the other geese. And it was quite the show to see. None of the geese ever died from this kind of behavior, but in the same aspect, they didn't mess with her anymore for a while. Fast forward another year or two, and they started to realize if they get a front-on attack, she'd grab them by the neck. So one or two of them would come at the front, and then one or two would come from the back. So she started carrying the 5-foot shepherd's hook. Now she had her arms reach plus another 5 foot with a hook on the end of it. And it's not a pointed hook. It's a rounded hook for catching sheep. She would go and loop those around their neck, bring them in close, and then do a hammer toss with them as well. So she took no guff from the geese anymore. And so they stay away from her. And there's quite a few animals that keep their distance from her. I mean, she loves animals. She will baby the sick. She will bring them in and bottle feed them in her room. She's very empathetic to a lot of the animals, but once you cross her, you better watch out. So we had a couple of rams that are friendly. They like getting pet. They like coming up to you, but they'll ram her and my wife. And so wife carries a big stick, and it's got a root ball on the end that's rounded off, so it's got some weight on the end, and she uses that. She doesn't necessarily hit them hard, but it's usually a tap with it to say, hey, buddy, keep your distance. If you want to keep ramming me, I'll knock you over. We doesn't even let them get to that. If they start backing up like they're going to ram her, and they're doing this to ram her, but it's more for an attention, hey, play with me, because she used to play with them and kind of roughhouse and even ride them. She'll smack them on the nose, and you can hear it too when she does it. She's not easy with it. And the ram, I've had one ram me, and I think it was I was petting him. I turned my back, and he wanted me to continue to pet him, and I wasn't prepared for it. He caught me in the back of the knee. I flipped him over on his back, on his side, put my knee on him, and just sat there and looked at him in the eye for a good 5-10 minutes. Let him up. He's never rammed me again. Now he'll come up and want pets and kind of nuzzle me with his head, but he won't ram. He will ram my wife. And I don't know if it's just she's scared of him. They pick up on the fear, but they will go after her. She's got her shtick. But now we, as now that she's gotten bigger and got some more oomph on her, she can flip the rams, and she'll do this regularly. So even if they're not ramming her, if she's just there, they're not really paying attention, she'll come up, grab their legs, flip them over, put her knee on them, look them in the eye, let them sit there for a minute. She talks to them usually. Don't mess with me. Don't ever ram me again. You'll go into the dinner plate. I'll feed you to the dogs or the pigs kind of thing. And, for the most part, they've not rammed her anymore. At least those guys. We still have two that are much bigger. and she still carries a stick around them when we're working the sheet. So, you know, for a 12-year-old girl, she, one, not scared of the sheep, will flip them over, put them on their back. Betty, who's now about 1,500 pounds, she'll put her in her place, too. If Betty starts getting squirrely, kicking and jumping and wanting to play because she was a bottle baby, we didn't take any guff from her. I have multiple pictures and video of her walking Betty back from town, no leash, no leader, no nothing, just with a stick. And, you know, Betty's pretty good about walking with a stick. You just kind of tap her on the butt and tell her where she needs to go. But sometimes she gets a little pig-headed, puts her head down. We'll yell at her, smack her on her nose, and say, "We'll not be doing that." And Betty turns around and goes about her way. So, now, Wee Wild Woman is not something to be messed with at 12. And, you know, friend Bill, he says, well, she's definitely going to have a warning label when she starts getting suitors. I'm like, I don't know that I'm going to have to warn anybody. She's going to take care of it herself. And, you know, her famous line that she tells everybody is, "Don't mess with me or I'll feed you to the pigs." And she's pretty serious about doing it. So, anyway, I'm almost to where I need to be. This is actually going to be a twofer today. I am hoping to talk about the food bank and food waste a little more on the way home. So I wanted to talk to people about some of the stuff that we're doing with some of the food waste and how much we're keeping out of the landfill. And me just putting up pictures of what we get, along with not really a description, but, you know, just music or something. It's an hour and a half because I have hundreds of pictures of what some of this stuff is going into the landfill or was going to the landfill, and, you know, how to prevent it. So, anyway, until next time, this is the Fat Man Farmer from the Fat Man, Wee Wild Woman and the Fat Man Farmer, and we will talk to you guys again soon.